Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am Dave Smith. He is Robbie the Fire Bernstein. How you doing, brother?
I'm enjoying Key West. Misty out here, but I'm having a good time.
Yes, I should open with an apology to anyone who bought tickets to come see me down in Key West. I got a little bit of a stomach bug that ran through my whole family. And was not able to make the trip out there. I'm very sorry. This like never happens. I think this is the first time in all the years of doing stand-up that I've ever had to cancel a weekend. But there was, I don't know. If you have one of those vicious stomach bugs, it was, let me just tell you, there was no chance. I couldn't have made it to an Uber outside my house. There was no chance I was making it down to Key West. And believe me, you didn't want to see me in the shape I was in. Perform stand-up comedy. So Rob's down there doing all the shows like the hero that he is. So I'm glad you were able to do them, Rob, and I'm glad you're having fun down there.
It's always funny when you got somewhere to go and you're like, that's got to be the end of it. I mean, it's got to be. I haven't eaten anything in 2 days. It's got to be the
dude,
end of
insane.
It.
I mean, it's insane. We were like, what is going on? Could someone cut me open and explain to me what, where is it? Oh, dude. And it's not, let me tell you something. When you and your wife, so we both had it. Well, the kids had it first. If you remember, Rob, when we were in Chicago in the green room, I was talking to Lauren on the phone because my son was vomiting and he had it. Then I got it quickly after that. But when you're both going through it and you got two little kids, it's like, it's something out of like one of those dramatic sports movies where you just have to like, you have to keep like giving yourself like these like coach pep talks, you know what I mean? Like you feel like you're going to die, but you have to keep running around after these little kids. And you're just like, it's not about how much you can take. Or it's about how much you can take and keep moving forward. And anyway, I'm feeling much, much better today. Although, you know, it's not like, when you're younger, you bounce back from these things, man. I am, I'm just drained. And, but anyway, I'm doing much better. I'll be fine. Everybody else, I was the last one to get it. So everyone else in the family is like a couple days better than me. But yeah, I got a pretty good immune system. A lot of times the family gets sick and I barely get it. But this one took me down with them. So anyway, I'll be fine for our next shows where we got Portland, St. Louis, Tacoma, a whole bunch of stuff coming up. ComicDaveSmith.com. All right. So let's get into today's show. I guess the lead topic just to talk about, though, I really don't have that much to say about it because there's not that much that is clear about what happened. But there was a huge terrorist attack in Moscow yesterday. I guess if nothing else, I'd say it's kind of another reminder of how dangerous these situations are and how, you know, the idea of being in a war of choice with Russia is so, you know, again, it kind of reminds me of when those missiles went off in Poland, and immediately Zelensky was claiming this was Russia. It was an attack on NATO. Senators and people, diplomats around the world were saying, invoke Article 5, go to war with Russia right now. And then we find out it was Ukrainian missiles, whether intentionally or not intentionally, that hit Poland. And so everything calms down because it's okay. You know, Ukraine's allowed to attack a NATO country. But you just see for a second there, like, oh, how dangerous this is. Like, what if those were Russian missiles that even accidentally hit Poland? And, you know, like, oh, wow, we could be in a much worse situation very quickly. Likewise, something like this, you just go, well, look, if this was a U.S. or a U.S. related group, if this was a Ukrainian group, how easily this could lead to some type of escalation. As of right now, we really don't know who did it. It seems that there was some ISIS little group that claimed responsibility for it, but that in itself is hard to know for sure. There are some people who it apparently looks like were caught, which, man, talk about. Daryl Cooper posted this. He goes, of all the people I wouldn't want to be in the history of the world, it might be someone who attempted to pull off a terrorist attack and escape in Vladimir Putin's Russia. I don't know who is behind this. I have seen nothing in the realm of evidence presented to suggest who is behind this. It does seem that the Russian government is already hinting at blaming Ukraine for it. They put out a couple statements about how the terrorists were trying to flee toward the Ukrainian border, and a couple other statements like that. Now, of course, that doesn't in any way suggest, you know, you can't trust the Russian government any more than you can trust any other government. That doesn't mean it was Ukrainians who did it. That simply means, for whatever reason, whether it's because it was Ukrainians or for other strategic reasons, Russia would like to blame Ukraine for this. Probably my guess is that, and this is purely speculation, but my guess is that Russia does not want to have another war on its hands now. They'd probably rather just blame the people they're already at war with, because this is a big enough terrorist attack. I think there were over 100 people were slaughtered. And in that case, someone like Vladimir Putin has to respond in some way. That's the whole appeal of a right-wing strongman, is that they respond to things like this. So anyway, we'll keep our eye on this story. I don't know that there's much more than that, but if you have any thoughts, go ahead, Rob.
No, I agree 100% that the escalations just aren't good, and that this is why you shouldn't, have quasi-wars with people. If you look back, remember that phony news story when they were saying that Putin was paying people who are killing our soldiers
in Afghanistan? Yes, the bounties on the heads of U.S. soldiers, yes.
Right, and it's like, well, what are we doing in Ukraine when we send them gear to go kill Russians? And then you see an escalation like this, where my first thought was, you know, ISIS seems to be this destabilizing force that sometimes even exists in the U.S. interest of destabilizing. And so when I saw the name, I was like, I bet that's going to be us. But then I remember that Putin was in Syria kicking ISIS's ass, so they might have a reason to attack. And then also, even if Russia's saying, hey, this was Ukraine, that could be just to drum up more support for the war in their own country.
Sure.
So I think this is in terms of who done it, it's anyone's game.
Yeah, I agree. Well, look, Vladimir Putin is certainly, or at least he's said, I don't know, I shouldn't say he's under the impression, but he has said that he's under the impression that, like, he said this in the Oliver Stone interview, where he said something like, oh, it does seem convenient that Al-Qaeda and ISIS are always doing the U.S.'s bidding. You know, that's kind of his thing. And right. Of course, as people do know, we do have a history of funding and arming and training these organizations. Now, I think the truth is not quite as neatly tied into a conspiracy. I think that we have funded and armed these groups when we think it's in our interest, even post 9/11, as in Syria. But if you listen, I think basically the whole thing, if you ever listen to John Kerry, who's on that hot, in fact, let's see if we could find that, Brian. There's the John Kerry hot mic. It might be hot mic, maybe secret recording. Anyway, I'll see if I can find the recording. But there's this part of it where John Kerry basically says that as they were sending the funding into Syria, they saw the rise of ISIS. And they thought that that would put pressure on Assad to cut a deal or step down or something like that. And so they were like, okay, like, we know the money and weapons are falling into ISIS's hands, but like, let's do this because it'll work. And then when ISIS
went the other way, they turned around and went the other way.
That's right. And so when ISIS turned around and invaded Iraq, John Kerry's like, we were all like, what? No, that's not what you were supposed to do. So anyway, much like, there's lots of examples like this, but like things like, you know, when CNN is all like covering for the Summer of Love and how the riots are the voice of the unheard, and then they start smashing up the CNN building, like, that wasn't part of the plan. That part wasn't part of what they were going for. But human beings do have agency, and even when you're trying to manipulate human beings toward your end, that doesn't mean they can't turn around and then decide they have their own you know, interests or their own plans. So to me, that's more accurate than just the clear you know, conspiracy of it. However, look, there's no question Vladimir Putin's had an issue with radical Islamist groups for a long time. And he certainly killed a whole lot of people in Syria. And he's, you know, like, he's fought wars in Chechnya and stuff. Like, he's got enemies there. And this is a problem they've had for a while. So it's not, it's certainly plausible that that could be, they could be the culprits in this. It's just that we don't know yet. But we will find out, hopefully at some point, and we will keep you guys updated on that situation. All right. Switching gears, I did want to speak a bit about a major media story that I am loosely involved in, but is that Candace Owens and the Daily Wire have parted ways, Rob, in a move none of us could have seen coming. I know you're as shocked as anybody else.
They're not even allowed to mention your name on that network. So the fact that she had you on for a whole episode, it was doomed.
Yeah, no, it was pretty cool. At least I got, I really am grateful to Candace Owens. I got on the Daily Wire to say everything I wanted to say. And I particularly said a lot of the things I really wanted to say on there. And I do not expect to ever go back.
It just, to me, this just totally shows that they have no interest in truth over there. They're a propagandist network. Sometimes people get suckered by these other conservatives that you think they're doing what we're doing, and they're actually looking at things and being truthful. And then you find out that, like, one of the topics that they care to just do propaganda on comes back into the news cycle. And so you had Candace Owens over there, not with the same directive when it came to the Israel story, asking fair questions about the murdering of civilians inside of Gaza. And they go, well, we can't be platforming this. We can't have this information out in the world.
Yeah. And look, of course, by the way, of course, they have a right to not work with Candace Owens. And look, I don't know exactly. I don't think anybody's revealed publicly what exactly happened and whether it was just that, whether she was fired.
Ben Hollinger, what are you doing? We're supposed to be doing propaganda here. You're supposed to be saying Israel's great. That's all that we can say here. Why would you do this?
Well, look, I know that Ben Shapiro, shortly after October 7th, when Candace Owens started kind of asking uncomfortable questions, it was Ben Shapiro publicly said, or he said something about how she was like an embarrassment. And then when she tweeted in response to it or something like that, and he quote tweeted her and said, Candace, that's my opinion, and you're more than welcome to quit. So now it's interesting for somebody who's an owner, one of the owners of a company. I will just say this from what I know of the industry. When an owner of a company like that is telling you you're more than welcome to quit instead of trying to fire you, that oftentimes means that whatever your contractual obligation is, it's more beneficial for him if you quit than if you are fired, which is typically true for most employment. It's typically true that it's a worse deal for you if you quit than if you are fired. So I'm sure there's some element of that to all of this, right? Like, there are contractual things like that where, of course, you know, and then there's the other elements that are like, you know, I'm sure obviously Ben Shapiro has wanted her off for quite a while. I'm sure the optics looked pretty bad of Candace Owens being fired for asking totally legitimate questions, particularly when you built your brand off we are the anti-cancel culture, anti-identity politics group, which I cannot stress enough was Ben Shapiro's entire rise to fame. That was his entire rise to fame, being that guy. And that's kind of, I think, what you're getting at, where you go like, a lot of these guys, they could kind of act like they're doing what we're doing until it comes to the three things that are off limits. You know what I mean? That you're not allowed to talk about. And they don't. So they don't actually have these principles that they claim to have. You know, someone tweeted to me because I was tweeting a little bit about this the other day, and they go, well, you could claim they're violating their principles, but Dave, you're violating your own principles of freedom of association. And it's like, no, I'm not. I'm not calling for the government to force the Daily Wire to continue employing Candace Owens. I'm simply saying that if your whole thing is we're against cancel culture, and we're specifically, where you could find these videos of Ben Shapiro, I tweeted one the other day where it's Ben Shapiro specifically saying, this is what the left does and conservatives don't do this. We don't do the cancel culture where we start calling you all types of racists and things like that and then cancel you. That's what the left does. We don't do that. The conservatives like, oh, actually you do. You do the exact same thing. The exact same thing, just only on your pet issue, not on their pet issue. If it's you're racist against blacks, you're like, oh, that's cancel culture. But if it's like you're an anti-Semite against Jews, then hey, yeah, get out of here. Now, I don't know exactly what happened. All I know is I texted Candace Owens the other day, and just but it was purely just to like, hey, best of luck to wherever you go. I think you handled this really well and stuff like that. I didn't ask anything. I wasn't going to ask for any inside details, and if I had gotten them, I wouldn't come and share them on the show. So I'm just letting you know, I know nothing more than what is public record. I will say this. There's a couple things. Number one, Candace Owens wrapped up her final show by saying, see you tomorrow, and we'll have a brand new show. So it does not seem like she left that show knowing that she would not have a show on the next day. The other thing I know is that one day before that, the ADL dropped a hit piece on Candace Owens. So it was now just all of the leading Zionist rabbis, all types of people in the conservative media landscape. And then the ADL came out with their piece. And by the way, the piece was par for the course, just a disgusting ADL smear hit piece. The piece centered around, and I'm not shitting you, like it's unbelievable that it's just like it's not the way any honest person operates. But the whole piece centered around how Nick Fuentes has been a fan of what Candace Owens is doing lately. So you're like, so look at this guy. Look at all the bad things he's said. And he likes what you're doing. Just this pure, yeah, like, it's not even guilt by association because they're not even associated. They're not, like Candace said, I've never met the guy. There's no association between them. It's just something that's completely out of your control, whether someone else or you don't know says, I like what you're doing there. So that's all it takes for you to be labeled, smeared, and demanded that you be fired.
It's a ridiculous standard, because I don't know if the country of North Korea became a fan of our biggest nuclear physicist, are we supposed to arrest our biggest nuclear physicist?
Well, clearly.
Now, in this, I think the argument is that, look, the person that we've said is the racist individual, Nick Fuentes, the gay Mexican. But anyways, you know, they've labeled him as a as this white nationalist icon, whatever. I don't really know what the brand is, but, you know, they deem him as toxic. So they're trying to say, oh, if even Nick Fuentes appreciates these opinions by Candace Owens, it must be that those opinions are wrong. But that's the affiliation that they're trying to claim, but it's not true. You like, I don't know, I could get on Run Your Mouth and say I like apples, and Nick Fuentes could go, oh, I like apples too, because he's a gay Mexican. Mexicans like that. Mm-hmm. So he
they
might.
Do. They do. Yeah. Listen, there's a fact.
That's a fact, right? So we might agree on our love for apples. That doesn't mean that I need to be censored on account of the fact that I have Nick Fuentes's endorsement on my opinion of apples.
Yeah. Or even something like not as random as that, but I could oppose the government in Israel because I think what they're doing to Palestinians is wrong. And I think that it hurt that America being so so tied in with Israel hurts our national interests. And somebody else who hates Jews can hate the government of Israel because they're made up of Jews. And if I say something against the government of Israel because I don't like what they're doing to the Palestinians, and someone who hates Jews goes, Dave makes a great point here, that just in no way takes away from my point or in any way is anything against me. This is stupid. I don't know what other word to use for it. It's not just stupid. It's what it is incredibly dishonest. And
it also shows your hands that you don't have anything better. Yeah. If the reason why you have to deplatform someone or an organization called the Anti-Defamation League has to go after someone, and this is the extent of their claim, you're showing your hands that you have nothing.
Yeah. And look, as I've mentioned on previous episodes, and as I mentioned on Twitter the other day, that look, however you feel about the arguments that Candace Owens is putting forward, and I tend to, from what I've seen of them, I tend to agree with most of them. But this is somebody who has not only the show that I was on with her, but I've seen her do this on several other occasions. This is somebody who has bent over backward to not be like, hey, I'm going in this far right, I hate the Jews direction. Like she's going out of her way to be like, listen, I have nothing against Jewish people. I have lots of Jewish people in my life who I love. I have nothing against Jewish people. I condemn Hamas. I condemn terrorism. What happened on October 7th was horrible. But I'm just looking at these images of dead Palestinian babies and like, dear God, this is just, how can this be an acceptable response? That's her position. And you would think if the other side wasn't so full of shit that this would be met with calls for conversations and debates and okay, let's have, you know what I mean? Like if the Daily Wire really was what they claimed to be, then that's what they'd be met with. And instead she's met with vicious smears. And you know, like we played some of that conversation with the Rabbi Barclay, you know, like he wasn't even there to have a conversation with her. He was there to give a lecture. And he was offended that she would ever like speak back. Whereas, you know, your job here, and there is something that a few of these, like the rabbis that you can have your rehabilitation campaign with. There's a few people who specialize in that, like Shmuley's one and Barclay's one, where if you say anything critical of Israel, we're going to label you an anti-Semite, but then you can come out on a tour with us and they like specialize in that. They are there for you to apologize to them to instruct you what you're allowed to believe and not believe, and for you to say, yes, sir, yes, rabbi, yes, sir. And that's, Candace Owens was just not willing to play that game. Because also his points were stupid. All of his points made no sense. And she's like, yeah, but that doesn't make any sense. No, sorry. Like, that may be your perspective, but it's not mine. And he's just getting infuriated at the fact that she's just not accepting him as, like, as if he's supposed to be her God or something like that. Like, you're not even a religious leader in her religion. Why would she be supposed to like look to you like that? Anyway,
that's kind of funny. They sent that guy in as the closer, and then he had to come back to the meeting going, guys, I tried all the Jew tricks. I cried. I whined. I said, you should feel guilty. None of it worked. We have to cancel her.
Yeah. You know, there's like another rabbi in there. He's like, but did you tell her that only we're allowed to define anti-Semitism? He's like, I did. Yes. I said that. It didn't work. That always works.
The world we live in, that Rabbi Shmuley Buttstuff wins again.
Yeah, something. Well, I will tell you, I really don't think Candace Owens loses out of this. I do think we're in a new landscape now, and I think the Daily Wire loses more than Candace Owens does. And that I think she stuck to her guns. And look, I don't know what's going on in that situation. I don't know if Candace Owens wanted to be fired. I will tell you, I know that she wasn't scared of it, and she wasn't about to alter her behavior in order to not be fired. But I'll say Candace Owens was in a very cushy spot. Like it's a good, she had a good thing going. I don't have her pay stubs, but I know Candace Owens was making very good money, like very good money over there at the Daily Wire. And she could have easily just bit her tongue on this one issue and probably been fine with them. And she wouldn't. And I think that's because she really believes what she's saying. And so I admire that, and I look forward to seeing what she does next. Open invite to ever come on this show, of course, to Candace Owens, and anything we can do to help her, we'll be happy to do. But it is, I guess it's It's an interesting story. It's very revealing about this kind of larger rift within the right half of America that's really been exposed since October 7th, where there's kind of the old school part of the of right wingers, the ones who are more tied to the establishment of the GOP, the ones who are, you know, by the way, there's lots of different kind of interesting factors here, but I will say let's say the Republicans who are on the any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitism, you know, train, the ones, the Ben Shapiro's and the Dennis Prager types, of those types, they were much more likely to have been never Trumpers when Donald Trump was first running in the 2016 primary. Many of them were, in fact, up until the last minute. Almost all of them got on board with Donald Trump ultimately, because I think they realized there was no way to be a right-wing influential commentator during the Trump years without being. But if you look back at it, a whole lot of them were never Trumpers to begin with. Now, that's not a criticism against that. I've never been a Donald Trump supporter. I'm just saying it's one of the things that's interesting between the two of them, because, of course, there's people who don't support Donald Trump, but a lot of them don't support him for different reasons. Like me and you may oppose Donald Trump, but we oppose him for very different reasons than the CIA opposes Donald Trump. Many of them opposed him because the America First rhetoric was far too like, hey, but what about all Israel over there? You know, because like purely America First might mean we're ditching Israel too. And they were a little bit uncomfortable with a lot of that rhetoric. I will say also, this is maybe a little bit less directly related, but I'm just saying, if you look at the people who were like totally cool with lockdowns and maybe even calling you a dope if you don't get the vaccine, a lot of those conservatives also seem to fall on that side of the divide. But there is a major divide here amongst right America over what exactly the correct position is in this war between Israel and the Palestinians. And what exactly is America's role in that? And how exactly are we supposed to talk about that and these type of things? So it was very interesting in that regard. And I, you know, I'll be curious to see where Candace goes next or what she does. She's certainly got, there's no shortage of opportunities or options for what she does next. And I don't know if she goes with another company. Of course, there's big players in this space now. There's Tucker Carlson just started a network. Patrick McDavid has a network. These are major, major networks. And then, of course, she can go independent and do her own thing. And so she's got a lot of options. And I'll be very curious to see where she goes next. But the Candace Owens and the Daily Wire marriage seems to have ended in a hasty divorce. So we've at least got that going. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Phoenix Ammunition, the premier supplier to the militia industrial complex, with 100% of their sales going directly to American citizens. No military contracts, no law enforcement deals, simply the highest quality American-made ammunition served directly to the people the Second Amendment was written for. Phoenix Ammo uses the highest quality component parts and the most advanced quality control system in the country to deliver exactly what you expect while at the range or when your life is on the line and performance matters above all else. Phoenix Ammunition is the trusted supplier for top-level competitive shooters, world-class training companies, including Haley Strategic Training, Warrior Poet Society, and recreational shooters nationwide. They ship directly to you with no middleman or distributors. Just the best quality ammo made by the American workers in Detroit, Michigan. Head to phoenixammo.com to subscribe to their propaganda newsletter and follow them on Twitter at Phoenix Ammunition for the latest in product updates, high quality trolling, small L libertarian commentary, and world-class meme warfare. I can tell you they're a great follow on Twitter at Phoenix Ammunition. Save up to 25%. All day, every day, with their automatic volume-based discounts. Come for the ammo, stay for the memes. PhoenixAmmo.com, at Phoenix Ammunition on X. All right, let's get back into the show. All right, One more story on a kind of a similar note here is, of course, now we talked about this briefly at the live show in Chicago, I believe it was, Rob. But this is it was a day before the interview aired when we recorded that show. And I believe, if I'm not getting this wrong, I believe I did predict before seeing it that what was the answer was just that Don Lemon was so stupid. Yeah, I knew this would be the prediction. Answer.
Yeah,
I just knew. I've just seen enough Don Lemon that they're like, oh, he had this heated debate with Elon Musk, and now Elon Musk doesn't want to be in a partnership with him. And I'm like, I can spoiler alert this for you. Here's what happened. He was really, really stupid. It's not just that he was contentious, but he was contentious and just like, oh, this is so dumb. And that turned out to totally be right. There is...
Elon Musk should have said that, by the way. How great would that have been? I'm pro free speech and he's invited on my platform, but I can't pay someone who's this stupid.
Yeah. I mean, that really would have been great. But it was just from top to bottom, it was just painfully dumb. And I will say this, that and I think you see, look, I think you see this to some degree with Chris Cuomo, although Chris Cuomo is certainly smarter than Don Lemon. Don Lemon really was like the dumbest one at CNN. It is remarkable the career he made for himself at doing something that he's so bad at doing. As somebody who's had, let's say, I've done a fair amount in the cable news world, not an insane amount, but I was like I was a regular panelist on Red Eye back when that was the late night show at Fox News. I was a regular panelist for many years on Kennedy's wonderful show over at Fox. And I've done the Greg Gutfeld show a whole bunch of times, and I've done Jesse Waters and a bunch of other random shows at Fox News. And of course I was a contributor for SE Cup Unfiltered back in the day. And so, you know, that's it. I haven't like done that much. There's people I've done a lot more, but I've done hundreds of cable news shows, and I'm also incredibly immersed in the podcast world, and I've done many of the biggest podcasts in the country, of course, and we do our this podcast here. And so as someone who's kind of had some experience in both worlds, and particularly with like the political podcast world versus the cable news world, look, there's about, on average, it's like something like a 20 point IQ jump in the podcast world compared to the cable news world. There are exceptions to that. There are people with high IQs in cable news, and there are people with low IQs in podcasting, but generally there's a level of dumb that you can be and still be able to pull off a cable news show, because there's really not that much to it. You know, if you can master 30 seconds of talking points on every issue, you could pretty much do cable news. Then it's just about who's better at selling these slogans, you know, whereas that's not the case when you do long form podcasting. You know, you have to have something to say, in the same sense that, like, you know, writing a book is not the same thing as writing an essay. You know, for anybody who's ever written an essay and written a book, you know, one of them is much more challenging than the other one. It's a very similar type of dynamic here. And you have to have a lot more to say in order to exist in this podcast world. And there's also just a different culture that has risen up in the podcast world than in, say, the corporate media world. And this is why even people like the Obama's podcast failed, because there's just not really, like, the people who are looking for an alternative to the corporate mainstream are not looking for more of that over here, for the most part. There are exceptions, but for the most part. So one of the things that's interesting about seeing Don Lemon almost come into this space is that it's just immediately put on display how dumb this is. Like, oh, we were having a way smarter conversation than whatever this is. This is just like the nonsense you guys do on CNN. This isn't really like a conversation. Anyway, there's a bunch of clips of it. Here's one of the clips of the interview between Don Lemon and Elon Musk.
If we lower the standards for what it takes to become a doctor.
You're saying if we lower the standards, yes. But do you believe people are dying because the standards are being lowered?
I don't
or have been.
I think that
lowered.
Is, yes, an issue, but it could become an issue.
Okay. But the actual evidence in history shows the exact opposite. If you look at how minorities are treated by the medical system, most doctors now are white. And there are lots of mistakes in medicine. So you're saying that my doctors have bad medical care? I'm trying to understand your logic here when it comes to DEI, because there's no actual evidence of what you're saying.
No, I said, so if the standards, like let's say, I think that particular thing was referring to surgeons. Let's say a surgeon is asked to, a surgeon in training is asked to do a series of operations under the supervision of a senior surgeon, and they get a bunch of those operations wrong. If that happens, and yet they are still approved to be a surgeon, the probability that someone will die, I think, at some point is high.
Okay, I understand that, but that's a hypothetical. That doesn't mean it's happening.
I didn't say it's happening.
You didn't say it was happening.
I said it will. I said if we lower standards, people will die.
But why respond to something or put something out there that has not happened? Because I could say,
I don't want it to happen. I think we don't want to lower standards.
Okay, if you look at the history of the medical industry, especially when it comes to Black Americans, it shows the exact opposite. If you look at the Tuskegee experiment and on, only 5% of doctors in America are Black. All of them are white. So are you saying that if the majority of doctors are white, are you saying that, and there are still these inequities, right? And there are still mistakes. Are you blaming DEI for that?
No, I'm very, very basically saying that if we lower standards for what it takes to become a board-certified surgeon or, an oncologist or something where the kind of disease we're talking about, if you make a mistake, causes someone to die, then there more people will die than if we don't lower the standards. Therefore, we should not lower the standards.
But why do you think they're lowering the standards for minority doctors or women doctors or...
That's what that article suggested. Yes, at Duke University.
Okay.
I mean, I got to say, it's kind of painful to just watch somebody be pushed to like the limits of their IQ. Because that's all this is here is just like it's strictly an IQ test. But how would you feel if you didn't eat breakfast this morning? And Don Lemon's going, I don't understand. I did eat breakfast this morning. And Elon Musk like, yeah, but if you hadn't eaten breakfast this morning, how would you feel? And he's like, I don't get your point because I did. And it's just this type of like, oh, you're having trouble like processing a basic counterfactual. It's like, and you just see it's. And by the way, this is the entire interview. This is the entire interview is Elon Musk, who is, however you feel about Elon Musk as like a political commentator or an opinion person, you're talking to like a legit genius. Okay. Now, listen, just because you're a genius in one field doesn't mean you're right about everything across every field, but he is a legitimate genius. No, that's not an exaggeration. And you're sitting there and he's like, oh, Jesus. You can actually see throughout the interview him realizing what he's dealing with here. There's. There's an episode of The Office where Kevin, Kevin's like the big fat dumb
guy. Yeah.
And so he's the new boss. This is after Michael Scott leaves the show. And the new boss comes in and Kevin makes this comment about the vending machine and how they always put their biggest seller at A1. He goes, but really your eyes go right to the middle. And so the biggest seller should be right in the middle. And the new boss takes this as like this brilliant metaphor. And he's like, yes, Kevin, now you're thinking outside the box. That's what I'm talking about. So what is our best product? And like everyone else is answering and stuff. And they put it all together. And he's like, Kevin, you are a genius. And like he gives him all the credit. And it's not till like the end of the episode that he's talking with him. And he realizes that Kevin was just talking about cookies. And like there was no deeper meaning to it or anything like that. And it feels like that was the whole episode was Elon Musk just going, oh, so we're just talking about cookies here. Oh, wow. I didn't realize it's possible that you're like this dumb and have made it to the level that you've made it to. But he's actually saying to him, the conversation there that we just played you is him going like, oh, okay, well, like if we lower standards for surgeons, then you will have more surgeons who are not as qualified as we have today. And if you have a lower quality of surgeons, more people will die than would have died with a higher quality of surgeons. And he's going, yeah, but I don't understand, because like we have surgeons right now and people die. And he's like, yes, but if you lower the standards, then we will have surgeons who are less competent than the surgeons we have today. He goes, well, I mean, the history seems to prove you wrong here, because we have surgeons already and people die already. And like, that's the level. That's what you're dealing with. And then on top of that, he's a dick. He's like overly contentious with really dumb things and starts asking him weird person. So anyway, so this is what happened. As I predicted, I knew this is what was going to happen. And yeah, again, now for people pointing this out, because of course we're talking about two examples here, and people will say like, oh, well, is it cancel culture when Elon Musk does this? Or is it cancel culture when Ben Shapiro or the Daily Wire get rid of Candace Owens or whatever happened there? Look, I'm not, obviously cancel culture is a little bit of an arbitrary term. People, there's always going to be things that get people to say they don't want to do business with you. I'm just saying, no, there are many differences here between Elon Musk, who didn't kick Don Lemon off of Twitter, said he's still welcome to post his videos on Twitter. He's just not interested in being in a partnership with him anymore because they had an interview and he's such an idiot. There is a difference between that and there being a topic that you are forbidden from discussing when you brand yourselves as the anti-cancel culture, free speech, anti-identity politics guys. I think those things are in many ways very different. Anyway, this is, a little bit of a glimpse into talking about the two worlds, the like corporate cable news world and the independent podcasting news world. Just to think about how slimy this guy Don Lemon is. This was his recounting of the interview on his show the next episode.
Do you think he was uncomfortable sitting in front of a gay black guy?
Probably more gay than black, I would think. I hate to say that, but I don't know.
I mean, ants haven't answered questions from...
I don't think he likes control beyond himself. And okay. So it doesn't matter who's exerting it. I don't think he much likes Joe Biden either, like a white guy, right?
Yeah.
So I think he doesn't like anybody in a position of control of him, because I think he probably had a youth. Now, again, not an excuse. Everyone's like, oh, he talked about it very briefly. I had a hard youth. Guess what? I had a hard youth too. So I'm sorry to tell you, everyone has a hard, many people, not everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't sit around. And one of the things that I think you did really well there, which could even be stressed more, was he was talking about, we have to get over it. Like, we did get over it. He goes, well, you're successful. He threw that in. Did you hear him say that to you?
Course.
Well, you overcame it. Like, why do we have to overcome it?
Right.
Like, why is this a tax? Why do I have a tax because I'm gay? Why do I have a tax because I'm a woman? Like, we have to, we do overcome it, but why in the world do we have to? Like, why isn't it? It would be really nice if we were all judged on our character and our results, but that's just not the case.
Yeah. So anyway, this is how they spin it. I guess he was uncomfortable talking to a gay black man. I guess that was the issue. Is it? It's first of all, it's shameful. It's shameful that your response to somebody who like, and by the way, they're not responding directly to that clip, but just for example, the way they'll go, if you go, hey, look, if you lower standards just because you want to see more black doctors, the problem you have here is that now you've lowered the standards for doctors, and think about what that implies. And that your response to that is like, well, you're an awful person. You hate blacks and gays. You're just uncomfortable talking to a black man or something like that. But it's like the only go-to they have in their book. And I think one of the reasons why this just falls so flat and is just more and more, it's like, I don't know, there's something, there's some analogy between, you know, how we were talking with Ken Wiener the other day. And you're talking about on the economic side of things, how like we have to, whatever the numbers are exactly, but like we have to borrow like $2 trillion now to get like 1.5 GDP growth or something like that. Like, you got to borrow so much. You got to squeeze the lemon so much, and you only get a little bit, like, out, you get less and less. And part of the reason why I think this woke shit is just getting less squeeze. You know what I mean? For like, the allegation has to be so much more over the top. And then there's just not nearly as many people are actually going, oh yeah, I guess that guy's racist. It's just like, this show just doesn't fit. It just doesn't make sense at all. This thing would go, he was just so uncomfortable talking to a black gay. Like, as if, what are we living in, the 1930s? Like, I know some people say some crazy shit on social media, but the truth is that America got over the black thing like many years before I was born. I don't know. It was never a thing my whole lifetime. It was never like, ooh, there's a black guy and a black guy speaking back to a white. This is crazy. Now, who even has that mentality? Who are you even describing? And the gay thing is like, been long. No one on my side of 50 is like, really, like, this is some new thing to them, or it's even an issue at all. Elon Musk is sitting down there and discussing ideas with Don Lemon. He had clearly, I'm pretty sure he knew he was gay and black when he first welcomed him on to Twitter and was talking about doing a partnership with him, right? It's clearly not that. But that's all they have to go to, because they know they can't win the argument. So it's just into psychoanalyzing, oh, you're a bad person for this reason or that reason. It's, I don't know. It's pretty wild.
Fun to watch, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I do agree.
And
with you on
Keith
that.
Weiner, just to issue the correction.
Oh, what did I say?
Ken? That was right.
Oh, my bad. Keith Weiner. My apologies. A great episode, by the way. If you guys haven't, go back and check that out. He's a real smart guy. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is SheathUnderwear.com, the underwear of legends. Sheath Underwear, what an amazing company. Great people who run this company, okay? They have been advertising on this podcast for over 3 years at this point, and I still have the two pairs of boxer briefs that they sent me when they first signed up as an advertiser. And I'll tell you, I still wear them all the time. They're as comfortable now as they were over 3 years ago. My entire underwear drawer is Sheath underwear. I do not wear anything else. Go get yourself a pair. It is the most comfortable pair of boxer briefs you will ever put on your body. What more do you need to know? They're a longtime sponsor of this show. It's an amazing product. Go support our show by supporting Sheath underwear at sheathunderwear.com. And not only are you going to get the most comfortable pair of boxer briefs you've ever worn, but if you use the promo code PROBLEM20, you're going to get 20% off your next order. Sheathunderwear.com, promo code PROBLEM20 for 20% off your next order. All right, let's get back into the show. All right, anyway, another clip that that caught my eye, which I guess is kind of on a similar topic of this whole woke insanity, but this was Tom Elliott, who's a great follow on Twitter. He shared this, and I just thought this was worth going over. Here is MSNBC's, and they have a... found a person who is
Is this that same lady?
It's this guy is everyone. He is every race, every gender, every hairstyle, all mixed into one. The perfect MSNBC anchor. Let's hear from him.
One of the core things that works in persuasion is having a deep, acute understanding of what's going on with the people you're trying to persuade, right? And what you're talking about, you are hearing like anthropological, regular person data that I think is sometimes not translating into the big conversations. Look, a couple things. First of all, the confidence I think comes from a place of sometimes when we're doing the right thing and we're up against something that is truly barbaric, it's easy to get smug because you feel like it should be enough to just do the right thing. I think there's two things that they're missing. One is the deep inner life of the country right now is full of anxiety and fear. And that is across groups, right? The people of color drifting towards Trump, they're not attracted to white supremacy. They're anxious. They're afraid. There's a lot of men.
About?
It's an era of dramatic change. Mm-hmm. Some of that is progress that people are scared of. Some of that is things like climate, where it feels like, do I have to completely change my whole way of life to continue existing? White people afraid of being born in a 90%, 80% white country that's becoming a different kind of country. Some people are great with it. Some people are scared about it. Normal, totally normal. Mm-hmm. It is normal to be anxious about change. But this has been an era of head-spinning change on so many fronts, from technology to the rise of China. One day you manufacture furniture in North Carolina, the other day no one manufactures furniture in North Carolina. We're changing the meaning of being a man. We're changing the racial makeup of the country very fast. And these are, in many cases, good things, some cases, bad things. I think there is an organizing challenge that the Biden administration, the Biden campaign, and Democrats more broadly, and outside groups need to really think about, to speak to the people you're hearing from, that it goes beyond, here's this issue, here's this piece of legislation, but like, what are people feeling? Why are people so anxious? Why are people so angry? Why are people so on edge? It is usually deeper stuff, right? The stuff around masculinity, it's not about today's issue. It is men not knowing who they are gonna be in a gender equal country and not having a good sense of themselves. That stuff is the most dangerous stuff in politics. It's the most easily weaponized stuff.
All right, so here's what I'll say is that for MSNBC, that is what passes for like one of their deeper moments. But it is, because you got a guy there who's going like, oh, listen, okay, but before we bash all these guys and we just act smug, understand that like they have their own fears and their own concerns and things like this. Now, of course, he gave you his conclusion at the beginning. Well, listen, when you're standing in the face of evil and you're doing good, you know, it's easy to get smug sometimes. But let's remember that there's some people who are getting attracted over to that side of evil. But it's really just because they have their own, you know, like they have their issues and we're making progress. And on the way to this new world that we're transforming them to, there's a lot of people who are anxious and they don't know. You know, I mean, we're redefining what it is to be a man. And we're redefining the racial makeup of the country. And we're redefining this and that. I mean, we're redefining everything about our society. And of course, this is progress. We're the good guys. But there's going to be a lot of people who are anxious about this. The funny thing is that he almost has to start with his conclusion, which is that obviously we're the good guys here. We're the good guys standing up against the bad guys. Because if you don't assure yourself of that first, and I know, listen, on some level, there's a reason why he starts with that conclusion. Because if you don't assure yourself of that first, you're going to bump up into an obvious problem here, which is that, like, maybe you're not the good guys. I mean, you're saying we're redefining what it is to be a man, and we're redefining the racial makeup of the country, and we're redefining all these fundamental things. One might ask, oh, did the people vote on that? And I don't mean just like democratically. I mean, like, do you have like an opinion poll that says the overwhelming majority of these people want to redefine what it is to be a man? Maybe a lot of people don't. Maybe a lot of people are happy with the old definition. Perhaps there's a small group of people who are forcing this on the rest of society. And what you're seeing is not just a vague anxiety, but a very specific pushback toward your goal of completely reorganizing society. Now, you just take it as an a priori given that moving toward a gender equal society is a good thing. I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe genders are supposed to be different. Maybe that's actually their benefit. Maybe there wouldn't be two genders if it wasn't better to have two different genders. I don't know. I got kids, and for anyone else out there who has kids, you're right. Mommy and daddy are two different things. They're two really important things, but they're not equal. They're not the same. They're very different. And I would argue almost they're not equal in every situation. In every situation, they're different and never the same. But I do find this to be, it's funny because this is almost, You have guys at MSNBC who have to look and just imagine like being trapped in their worldview and looking around and seeing that Donald Trump is gaining support amongst minority voters. After your entire campaign from 2016 to today, he's gaining in minority voters. And even this guy has to say, you know, I don't think it's the white supremacy that they're attracted to. Yeah, of course not. Obviously, minority voters are not moving in the direction of white supremacy. But of course, again, all of these things, even when he's trying to think, trying to actually grapple with what's going on, he never even grapples with like, well, maybe there is no white supremacy there. Maybe Donald Trump's not a white supremacist. And we've been working with a faulty, you know, like given this entire time. But he's like, no, there's the white supremacy, but there's got to be something else. Yeah, it's their anxiety. Let's just psychoanalyze them. Whereas you can just talk to those people There's lots of opinion polling on this. And actually, it's just here. What is the thing that they don't like? Okay. They don't like the economy under Joe Biden. They don't like the open borders under Joe Biden. They don't like the woke shit. The woke shit turns off minorities, turns out, because it was all invented by a bunch of upper middle class white women. Or at least that's who it plays to. And so all that stuff you're talking about, how you're like, oh, we're going to completely transform what it is to be a man. We're going to transform the racial makeup of the country. Oh, guess what? Turns out racial minorities in this country don't like either of those two things. They don't like that. They don't agree with you. They don't agree that we should flood the country with millions and millions and millions of poor people from all around the world. They don't agree with that. Turns out. And they actually are, they already are very comfortable with the definition of a man. They're not looking for like some future where men and women have to completely reinvent what our roles as men and women are and what our relationships are to be with each other. It's like, no, we figured it out already, like husbands and wives. We're good with that. That's what we like. And it is amazing that these progressive types, like the dissidence between their view that, democracy is the number one goal and something, you know, we're against fascism and this top down dictatorship stuff. But then they're also like, oh, and by the way, here's our cultural agenda. And we have no interest in whether people want this or not. It's just, how do we shove this down your throat? That's their only question. All right. We got to wrap there. I am slowly recovering, folks. I'll be back to 100% by the next time you guys hear me. Thank you very much. Come out and see us live sometime soon. ComicDaveSmith.com for all of our ticket links. RobbieTheFire.com for all of Rob's headlining stuff. Run Your Mouth, Rob's other fantastic podcast. That's it for us. Catch you next time. Peace.